All right, My Muscle Project, welcome back to this episode of In the Black number 63. Today we're in person with Nick, and Nick is, he's best known probably Nick A Films. It's just a weird name. It's hard to pronounce. It's Nick E.H. Films.
Nick A.
He kind of explained to us how he got that nickname. Anyway, so how did we come across Nick? Because normally this sort of guy wouldn't come onto our radar, but one of the reception girls at our studio, she kind of saw in our emails that we're always looking for guests, and through a friend of a friend, she basically knows Nick, and Nick has a very extensive rap sheet. So he kind of goes on to explain his story, but this guy has basically been a film freelancer, content creator for action sports. He's worked with like Tony Hawk. Now he is employed by Russell Crowe. So some big names, obviously, in the action sports and the film industry. So a very talented guy. But he started his own fitness journey, and he ended up deciding that he wanted to start an activewear company. And that is what today's episode is about.
Yeah, he's like a child prodigy of business and filmmaking. He's getting flown around the world to do shoots and stuff when he was like 15, 16 years old.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. And his work is pretty cool. So if you want to check that out, it's on his Instagram, Nick EH Films on Instagram and on YouTube as well, where you can find some of his stuff. But this episode's cool. Like, it's just a young Aussie dude who's ambitious, who's very well connected, very talented, and wants to start an activewear brand in a very saturated market. So having to go at it a slightly different way. And he definitely has a slightly different mission and approach to how he's doing that. And we reviewed his apparel as well, which he brought into the studio on the after show earlier in the week. And yeah, we tried it out. So listen to that review and check that out. And if you want to know more about the brand Humble, it's H-U-M-B-E-L-L. So like Humble with dumbbell combined. So check that out. All right, guys, before we jump into the episode today, remember we are sponsored by True Coach. It is the best way to deliver online programming and receive it. It's all done through an app now. You can do it on the computer as well. Raf, you upload your training videos. You message Stara, your coach, as well on there. What are some other features on there that you enjoy using that you find just makes your life easier?
I would say one of the biggest ones is just, you know, when you're like in the middle of training and you really need to know the answer to one of those like exercises you get or anything like that, the videos come automatically up. So I think it's filmed in, I want to say like Catalyst Athletic, one of the really big American weightlifting gyms that's super well known, CA. And when he programs an exercise, it automatically gives you from the video library what the exercise looks like.
Right.
So it's like he'll program, you know, snatch deadlift slow off the floor. And there's some video of a chick doing a perfect snatch deadlift. And you know what it is, deficit deadlifts. They've got like a full library in there. So that just makes it easy.
Nice. So if you guys want to get on True Coach, it's truecoach.co/MMP. And you can go there, and basically what it'll do, it'll give you a free trial. Try it out. And then if you do decide to join up, it's a very cheap price, but they'll even give you a discount on that price as well for the next month. So you can only win. Also, guys, we're brought to you by Waterfy. Waterfy is the gym software platform that we use at all three Creature locations that our clients love. Makes it really easy on the back end for coaches to kind of analyze data, for us to track attendance, to look at which classes, you know, so every quarter we change the timetable at the gym. We do that based off really good attendance data that is summarized really nicely into cool graphs on Waterfy. So if you guys want to make the perfect adjustments at the right time to satisfy your coaches and clients, using something like Waterfy is the best way to do that.
Yeah, and I think one of the best things about Waterfy is it's always affordable because they charge you per member at the gym. So if you're just starting out, it's outrageously cheap if you haven't got many clients. And if you've got a ton of clients, still fits easy in the budget because it just works out per member. So something that like pretty much works from the day you start your gym to the day you're full.
Nice. So waterfy.com/MMP, and you guys can get that offer. And last thing, guys, before we get into this episode, three In the Blacks ago, In the Black 61, I want to say, we did an episode on basically valuing gyms and valuing assets and stuff. And we had an offer there for anyone that's interested in purchasing a fitness studio in Sydney. So if you want to check out that offer, if you want to get into the gym game, go check out that episode. And there'll be the offer right at the end of that show. All right, guys, let's get into it with Nick A Films. All right, My Muscle Project, welcome back to an episode of In the Black. In the studio today with Nick Hodgkin.
Yeah.
Should I say it?
Yeah. That's it.
Owner of Humble Apparel. H-U-M-B-E-L-L. Like a dumbbell. Yeah, in case you're wondering.
It's taken me all morning.
Yeah.
To pick up on that pun.
Yeah. So we're here to talk about the apparel brand, but before we get into that, because it is fairly new, we're more interested about the story behind the brand and some of Nick's story as well. We were introduced by a receptionist downstairs at the studio, Megan. So thank you, Megan, if you're listening to this. So yeah, we're connected here and we want to know why. I did look into some of your stuff on YouTube and you mentioned that you've been in the action sports film industry for a long time. You've also had an opportunity to work with some like pretty cool people.
Yeah.
But it was kind of an interesting transition as I watched some of your videos and then you're like, activewear apparel brand. It just seemed like a bit of, to me, from the outside looking in, it seemed like you were in kind of one field and you just made a huge leap and crossed over into something else.
Mm-hmm.
So before that cross, tell us about yourself and growing up and how you kind of got into film and action sports.
Yep. So at the age of 12, I picked up a skateboard and it was after Tony Hawk's Pro Skater come out. I'm sure you guys dabbled
the video
in that.
Game?
Yeah. Back in the day.
Yeah, we thrashed it.
Yeah. So that came out and I was like, you know what? I want to be a skateboarder. Like, that's all I want to do. And then it didn't take me long to figure out that all my friends were really good and I wasn't so good. So I always ended up with a camera at the skate park, borrowing cameras off my grandparents and my family. And then for my 12th birthday, my grandparents bought me a little camera. So I used to film myself skateboarding and, you know, take it. This is before social media was huge. So I'd take it to school and show my friends, oh, look, I landed a kickflip, whatever it was. And then one day I put a video together and put it on YouTube and my friends were all like...
What year did you put on YouTube?
2007. Ooh. It's still on there. You can go check it out.
So early days of YouTube.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, very, very early days of YouTube. So all my friends were like, you know what? I want a video now. So I'm like, all right, well, I'll give it a go. So after school, every day we'd go down the skate park and I'd be filming them. And then over the next year, I was just... It was only Windows Movie Maker back then, which was like a really terrible editing
software. I remember that one.
Yeah.
Windows Movie Maker.
Yeah. So you couldn't do much with it, but... I was just, you know, reading tutorials and learning everything about it. And about a year later, I decided that I wanted to get more into the photo side of things. So I still to this day don't know how my grandma did it, but she got money together and bought me a SLR camera. And I just started shooting photos for like probably a year, I'd say.
Mm.
And then I got to the point where I was like, no, I want to get back into video. So same deal. My family saw that I was really getting into this and put money together and got me a camcorder. And then, so we're talking 2009 now. So I started a new YouTube channel in 2009. And it's how I got stuck with the name Nikkei now. So I was trying to think of a YouTube name. Everyone had like their name as like, you know, if they were a skateboarder, it was Nick Skates. If they were a BMX rider, it was Nick Bikes, whatever it was. So I tried to get Nick Films and obviously super creative, but it was taken and all my friends at the time were calling me Nicka. I don't know how it come apart, but...
Like Nick with EH on the end.
Yeah. And then, so I didn't think anything would happen with my YouTube channel. Called it that.
Yeah.
Nicka Films. And then, so we're talking April 2009 and it blew up pretty quick. For those days, the stats were pretty good.
Yeah.
And, by the time it was December, I was in California with all my friends, like fully paid for.
Wow.
Filming, you know, skate and scooter stuff over there.
Wow. Who paid for that?
So I was with a company at the time called MGP.
Okay.
So they're an action sports company in Melbourne. And, you know, they were really good. They saw that. So back then, that's when the scooter riding sport kind of blew up and they saw that that was going to be a thing. And, they sent us over to a competition in California. And it's pretty insane. Like 15 years old. Being over there, no parents, just a bunch of mates, and you know, I'm still friends with all those guys today.
Mm.
So I was with them. So we're talking year nine. I was in year nine at school, and I was with them all through high school. So every school holidays, I was in Melbourne, or they'd fly us over to England or California, wherever it was, just making videos with this team. And then after school, they gave me a full-time position, so I was working from home, still traveling and filming with them. And then when I was 20, I want to say 20. They said to me, look, we really like working with you. We want you to move down to Melbourne. Like, we can't have you working in Sydney all the time. So I was kind of given this, like, opportunity. Do I want to go to Melbourne and work full-time for them, or do I want to do my own thing? And, like, all my mates and all my family are up in Sydney, so I was like, look, like, I appreciate everything you guys have done, and I'm still on good terms with them, but I think I'm going to go freelance. So I went freelance, and it was really hard being a filmmaker when you're 20 and you've got no... like I didn't go to film school or anything like that. I'm completely self-taught.
Right.
And no one really puts faith in you. And so it was hard to build a client list. But I managed to, with the help of like Monster Skate Park and stuff like that in Sydney, I got on board with the Tony Hawk tour. So they went down to Melbourne and for the Formula One. So that was like, I thought that was it for me. Like, I was like, no way, I'm meeting Tony Hawk. Like,
yeah, yeah.
He's the reason I started skateboarding from his video game.
Yeah.
So we're down in Melbourne shooting with him. And
you were shooting Tony?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's sick.
So shout out to the Monster for making that happen. But so I was down in Melbourne shooting a video with Tony, and it was, yeah, that was like, I couldn't believe that was
like dream comes
dream come true.
Yeah, yeah.
And then cool. It was only about a month later that we got in chat with Bose Headphones.
Okay.
And they sent, there's a skater girl from Bondi. She lives in Newcastle now. Her name's Poppy Awesome.
Mm-hmm.
She's one of the best female skateboarders in the world. And we got invited to the Vans Bowl-O-Rama over in, oh, not the Bowl-O-Rama, sorry, the Vans Jam in Orange County in California.
Right.
And we went over there and shot that, and we got the opportunity to go to Tony Hawk's private skate park at his warehouse and film all this stuff. So this is when I was about 20, 21. So I was still doing all this, like, you know, filmmaking overseas and meeting all these incredible people. And I just didn't think it would get any better than that. But it seemed, I don't know how, but it just seemed to keep getting better. Like, I got back from California, then got invited by Bose to go to Italy and film a snowboarding film straight after that. And then it was just, yeah, I don't know, it just kept leveling up. I just couldn't figure out how it was happening, but I just kept working and kept it happening. And then...
So, are you in charge of making the film? Like, are you... They send you in, they're like...
One-man crew, yeah.
Right, okay. So, you film, you audio everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you don't have, like, a crew with you or anything?
No.
Right, okay.
Not in these days, no.
Okay.
It was just me and backpack.
Right, right. Yeah.
And a road microphone, like what you guys have got here.
Yeah.
But, so, we were doing all that, and this is when kind of Instagram started to blow up and stuff as well. So, I was doing Instagram stuff, and I was doing YouTube stuff. That's how I was making my money. And then... I wanted to start teaching kids as well, because I found that, especially in action sports, there's no kind of guide.
Film or skating?
Film, yeah.
Film, right.
So Monster Skate Park and I put together these holiday camps where kids would come out for a week in the school holidays, and I'd teach them everything. By the end of the week, they'd have an edit that they can walk away with.
Mm.
So I was doing that every school holidays, and then I was actually teaching at my old primary school once a week as well, because they started a film division.
Okay.
And, I was loving the teaching, so that was another form of income that I could do to, so I could keep my YouTube afloat. And then, because back then, like, YouTube's blown up now, but
yeah,
back then it was hard to make decent income off it.
Yeah.
But it was one of those camps where I met a kid named Jesse, and we spent the day together, and I taught him a bunch of stuff. And his mum picked him up at the end of the day, and she was really stoked on how his video looked. And the next day, I got mentioned in a tweet by Chris Murphy, who's a criminal lawyer. So, he represents a bunch of celebrities and stuff like that. And I recognize...
Criminal lawyer, bunch of celebrities.
Wait, no,
celebrities are criminals.
No, yeah. But Chris is honestly, like, such a legend.
Yeah.
He's such a good dude. And I'd recognized his name from the TV before. And I was like, what's Chris Murphy tweeting me about? And then... Because I don't even use Twitter. That's why...
Right.
Confused on the
right.
On the mention, and then they were really, like, thankful for what I'd done for Jesse, and they said, we want to introduce you to someone. So they put me in contact with Keith Roger, film producer, and this is 2015. So I ended up getting a job at South City Media, which is owned by Keith Roger and Russell Crowe.
Yeah.
So I didn't want to work for anyone at this, like, I was having a blast, like, you know, teaching and filming my own stuff, but it's a bit hard to say no to a job when, you know, Keith Russell Roger Crow. And Russell Crowe are involved, so.
Yeah. It's fucking scary just saying no to Russell Crowe, full stop.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so.
Man, don't want to upset him.
No. He's you know what, he's such a good dude. He's looked after me very well. Same with Keith. They're both really good guys. And
how were you when you first met them, when you went up for the... they asked you, right? So, it wasn't really an interview.
It was kind of an interview. Like I went and I spoke to Keith, and he was kind of like, what can you do? What are you capable of? And the main reason they hired me was because of my action sports background. And obviously, Russell owns the Rabbitohs, and they do a lot of content with them. So,
right.
It kind of went hand in hand. And then, yeah, it was really nervous at first. Like, it was my first... Technically, it was my first job because, well... I mean, I worked for Mad Gear, but it didn't ever really feel like a job. I mean, this doesn't feel like a job, but it was like my first interview and my first kind of, like, you know, real world situation. But, no, it was really cool. Like, meeting Russell for the first time, and obviously I was nervous.
Yeah.
But now we've I've been working for them for almost 4 years, so it's great now.
And what's some stuff that you've done with them?
A lot of stuff I do with them is pretty low key, but you know, we do a bunch of the Rabbitohs, obviously, and I've shot music videos, and I've shot a few documentaries, and
cool.
The cool thing about working with these guys is they really want to give you a great opportunity. So like they've put me in positions where I've done, you know, behind the scenes on feature films and stuff like that as well.
Yeah.
And like both Keith and Russell just want to see you grow.
Yeah. So I assume you're working with a team now, right? It's not just you anymore. So.
So I'm not on my
own. Not the only guy on set.
Yeah.
Okay. Was that different, having to adapt to that? Obviously being freelancer, do every shot you want, how you want it. And now you got to fit in.
It was kind of weird because like in the action sports world, like I was like, you know, on top of my game, I guess you could say, in that little world. And then I'm like a tiny fish in a huge pond when I get put into the actual film industry. But you know what? Like I've met so many great people and so many great DOPs and cinematographers and directors that have, you know, if you look at my films now and you look at my films then, there's a huge, huge difference.
Mm.
But I really like being surrounded by, you know, people that are great mentors, and I love learning off other people. So
now, you didn't go to film school, but
nah.
How many people in that industry now, like, are you a black sheep? Is everyone been in film industry and everyone's done the standard stuff, or are you finding there are more people like you who've kind of gotten a start through something like YouTube or word of mouth?
I think these days it's a lot easier to get a start without it.
Because of Instagram, and you can put your portfolio up there and stuff. Yeah,
exactly. And there's so much access to information on the internet. Like, you can learn, if you're stuck on a certain effect, you can Google, how do I do this? And it, boom, comes up. But like Keith was actually showing me a film or a video the other day with a cinematographer talking. He said that he was talking to a class of film students, and one of the students asked, how many of us are going to have a job like once school's finished? Apparently the teacher of the class got really annoyed because the cinematographer said 1% of you. Like, there's so many people trying to get into the industry now, and I'm so lucky that I was given that opportunity, and I'm very lucky to have the job that I have because the creative industry is on another level these days. Like, there's so many people involved with Instagram and being photographers and filmmakers and content creators. It's such a hard industry to crack into, I suppose.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I definitely, like, I work with a lot of guys that have been through AFTERS, which is a film school, and just by Fox. But there are a lot of people that are, you know, doing their own thing and making it work. So it's kind of cool.
I guess maybe it's like a lot of people can be in it now because it's so easy to put a video on Instagram or YouTube. Yeah. But it's hard for people to score like big jobs like you've got, right? Like, get really good paid work outside freelancing. Yeah,
it's hard to get consistent.
Yeah.
A consistent income.
Yeah.
But I mean, if you can crack that freelance cinematographer industry or whatever it may be, there's like, it's very rewarding.
Yeah. 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 I know some of the big names like Sam Cold and
Jay Alvarez.
Yeah. Jay Alvarez and stuff. Those guys, I think, are like the inspiration for people that want to do that sort of stuff, right?
Yeah.
Kind of the subject is sort of their life, but at the same time, they do such a good job at filming themselves and what they're up to that brands hire them to shoot products, you know, of whatever it might be. I know Sam shot for Gymshark.
Yeah,
which is some pretty cool stuff. So tell us about Humble. Like, I watched a video of you, and you mentioning how your health went to shit, your mental health went to shit, you were overseas. You decided to come back, or you came back and decided to get healthy.
Yep.
Tell us about that stage of your life.
So I was in Europe. Russell's band did a tour of Europe. Okay. And I went along with that, which is really cool.
Russell has a band?
Yeah. So he's got this...
He's in the band?
Yeah.
Fuck. He can do whatever he wants.
Yeah.
What's the band called?
It's called Indoor Garden Party. So it's like a collective of friends of his. It's actually pretty entertaining.
What type of music is it?
All kinds of, like, a lot of, like, you know, rock and folk and stuff like that. But it's a really entertaining show. Okay.
So we won't see him at Ultra Music Festival?
No, you're not going to see him headlining Ultra anytime soon, I don't think. But, yeah, so they were doing like a little tour in Europe, which was really cool to be a part of. And I got home, and I was already like overweight before I went there, but like I saw pictures and stuff when I got home, and I was like, man, like, I've kind of let myself go. And I wasn't happy at the time. Like, I was loving my job, but then that was it. and like I was living at home with my parent, well, my mom and my auntie still, and it just like I just needed something different. And I woke up one morning, I'm like, no, I'm gonna go to the gym, like I want to do something for myself. So I started going to the gym, started eating healthy, I stripped a bunch of weight. I think it was like 101 kilos.
Wow.
Like just over triple digits.
But yeah, and you're not super tall either. How tall are you?
I'm 5'11".
Yeah.
But yeah, so I stripped a bunch of weight, and I obviously in doing so I was looking for active wear to buy, and I went and bought a bunch of Nike stuff. I really liked it, but I couldn't find much else that I thought was the same quality. And then the stuff that I did find, it was quite repetitive across the market. So it was almost like they're all going to the same supplier and slapping their logo on or whatever.
Yeah, maybe. For
and
sure.
That's not everyone, but
yeah,
that's just some of the stuff I was coming across. And I was like, man, like it's all the same. And I thought it's such a saturated market, so it'd be hard to tap into. But I felt like I wanted to grow and I wanted to evolve my film stuff. And I felt like doing action sports over and over again, I was not bored of it, but I just wanted a new challenge. And I saw the opportunity to start. So Humble initially was supposed to be a film project, and we're just going to get a couple t-shirts made, a couple hats made.
Right.
I started drawing up designs, and then my auntie that I lived with at the time was like she'd watched me. I'd lived with my auntie and my mum my whole life, and she'd watched me, you know, start and stop all these projects over my life. But she was like, you know what, like I've never had so much faith in you in a project than I have with this one. So she jumped in, and she's great. Like she invested in it at the start, and she's taken care of all our finance and all our logistics from there on out.
Mm.
So it went from having like two or three products to we've got 19 now, and we're still very new. But the whole point of it was that I could tell stories, and I have so many incredible friends. I have friends that are Olympians. I have friends that are, you know, X Games gold medalists. I have friends that are incredible fighters. I have friends that are in all different types of sports, and I just wanted to be able to tell their story and help them grow their career, whatever it may be. And that's why the reasoning behind the name as well. Obviously, as you said before, it's a play on the words humble and dumbbell. But it's more than that. It's not just, we're not trying to just be, as cliche as it sounds, we're not trying to just be an activewear label. We're trying to be, you know, a message, and we're trying to be, this is who we are. And we're about to shoot a campaign called We Are Humble, which will kind of explain that in more detail.
Right.
But we're not trying to, you know, pigeonhole ourselves into any stereotypes or anything like that.
Right.
We're trying to create a label that everybody is comfortable wearing, whether it be CrossFitters, whether it be football players, whether it be action sports athletes. And it you don't have to be training your whole life to be a part of it. You could be looking to take that first step, whatever it may be. We want to be able to everyone to feel comfortable, you know, wearing the label, because like obviously I have nothing against it, but when I was looking for activewear, I was finding shirts that were like, you know, train like a beast and stuff like that. And this, you know, this little pudgy kid didn't feel comfortable wearing a shirt that said, you know, lift, train, repeat, whatever. It just wasn't me. And I was like, well, what would I feel comfortable wearing? And that's kind of what I think about when I go to design stuff.
Yeah, I would say the vast majority of the activewear market right now is serving the largest portion of the market, which is bodybuilding and like Globo Gym and stuff. But it just seems like they're trying to make, even though maybe the words aren't written in an aggressive way, like you just mentioned, they're definitely making designs in a way that are very loud in like, you know, matching tracksuits and like bright pastels and stuff like that. So that's what you wanted to avoid. You didn't really want that portion of the market.
No. Okay. And it's not that I have anything against that portion of the market. I just want to be able to cater for as many different people as I can.
Right. And so what's the vision for this company? Like, where would you want to see it in like 5, 6?
Honestly, I'm happy as a filmmaker. I'm not looking at leaving my job anytime soon. So that's why it's great having so many friends involved in it. But where I would like to see it in say 5 years, 2 years, 3 years, is to be able to say, you know, there might be a BMX rider in Brazil that I think's got an incredible story. There might be a snowboarder in Japan. There might be a runner somewhere. And I can go, you know what, their story is incredible. Let's go and document it. Let's go and tell their story. Let's get them on board. And Gymshark, I think Gymshark's doing it pretty well with the pop-up stores and stuff like that. Love to be able to, you know, travel and take my friends that have helped with it with us and, you know, do pop-ups around the world and tell stories all over the world. And try and create like this, I guess, hub. So get, you know, content writers involved. And the website right now is just a store, but I'd love to make it like a one-stop shop in terms of you can go there to check out tutorials, there's people writing blogs, and just kind of make it like this place where everyone can, you know, feel comfortable to go and get information and
right
stuff like that too.
So your strategy is, because you have your filmmaking and media skills, is to like tell the stories better than the other brands.
Yeah,
so people feel really a part of it and they get sold it, and then yeah, they buy the gear or want to be a part of it.
Exactly.
So when people put on Humble, they want to you want them to think about the stories of the people that wear it, not the fact that it's the best fitting, nicest polyester, most modern cut sort of thing.
Well, obviously, like, I really do care about the quality of our products, and I've canned a bunch of products that were supposed to release because I wasn't happy with them.
Right.
So there's in terms of fits and stuff like that, we've worked for 11 months to try and get these right, and we're still progressing on that. So our t-shirts right now are a cotton blend, but we're experimenting with polyester, and we're experimenting with elastane and stuff like that. And we're experimenting with different fits and different shapes. So there's no lacking in the quality of the activewear. There's no lacking in that department whatsoever. It's more just, this is what we've got. And the reason, or the way we're going to try and stand out from such a saturated market, is by telling these stories.
Right.
And by, you know, making people feel welcome to be a part of it. Like, we really want to, you know, enhance that idea.
So what, like, if I'm looking at Nike and Gymshark and these other companies, they're innovating in terms of the look, like what is kind of the certain hems, right, the shapes, the fits, the cuts, all that sort of stuff, the collars. What are you trying to approach it from that perspective? You trying to keep up in that department as well? Like, what custom fits are you looking for specifically? Because you mentioned, you know, you were the pudgy kid that didn't really train, that sort of thing, and it's action sportswear people. When I think of action, you know, guys, I don't think of them taking their shirts off and flexing in the mirror, right? They look different. They're different shapes. So are you going for a different sort of cut in that perspective?
So obviously, besides our t-shirts right now, everything is custom made. So everything's a custom fit. Everything's completely custom. So that's a very expensive process. And for three kids that are trying to do this on their own kind of thing, my auntie's involved too, but the three of us, it's a very expensive process and it takes a long time. So you got to get a sample, then you got to tick that off, then you get a pre-production sample, and there's like 2 months in between that. And then once you tick that off, then it's like 3 months for production, and then you got to get minimum orders of everything. And
with so many options, like, what is the benefit of doing a custom cut? Is it just so you can be like, this is the one I've created, or it's to find something that isn't out there in the market?
It's to make something that is us, like, and then I can, you know, I can actually say we are different to other companies.
Sleep at night, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
When you didn't steal something.
Yeah, and I don't know, I feel much better about it. Like, I feel like, you know, we've created this, and this is really cool. And yes, this is different to other companies. And I'm not, you know, trying to rip people off or anything like
More
that.
More than just, like, the words on the thing. Yeah.
So as I said, right now, our t-shirts are a cotton blend, but we're experimenting with different... and it's finding factories as well that, you know, have the right values. And it's kind of cool, we came across, I'm not sure if you guys heard of Slyletica.
No.
So
it rings a bell though.
Slyletica is a company in Melbourne that helps influencers, you know, grow their brand and start their brand.
Right.
And they deal with all the factories for you. So it's like a third party, and they help with the design process and creating, you know, the proper tech packs that you need to give the factories and stuff like that.
Right.
So they're a really good service. And they have links to all the factories that, you know, don't obviously employ children, and they've got fair working for all members. And the thing that sold me as well was any issues that you have with, say they put the logo on not straight or whatever it may be, they have a foundation called the Blank Square Foundation, where they actually, they'll cover up the logo and then donate all the clothes to charity.
Well,
so they've helped like thousands of kids and thousands of people around the world.
Yeah.
So they're really, their values are really high. So that was something that was really important to us in the start. So finding these factories and finding, you know, materials was nothing that we knew about at the start. So to say that we've got our own shape and our own fits is something that I find important, because I wouldn't feel comfortable just slapping our logo on something that another activewear company's selling the exact same fit, or the exact same short, or whatever it may be.
Yeah. What are some of the things you're finding now after, like, just over a year in business?
Well, three months we launched Ugo, but right. a year of sampling. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, since you kind of started investing money into it, right?
Yeah.
What are you finding outside of the logistics stuff and the apparel is tough that you didn't see coming?
Okay, so just defining each other's roles. So there's four of us trying to figure out where we each fit the best in. And
what have you come up with?
Oh, Reese. So I've known Reese for 12 years. He's got a background in sales and a little bit in marketing. So he's really good on, you know, talking with our manufacturers and stuff like that. Luke, my other housemate's a personal trainer. So he's kind of in charge of testing all the products and saying, okay, this is working, but this isn't working. And this company is doing this. We should look at doing something similar. And he's kind of head of figuring all that kind of stuff out.
Yeah.
And Donna, my aunt, is into finance and logistics. So she's in, we've got a warehouse where all our products kept. So they take care of all our shipping and stuff like that.
A warehouse in Australia?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And they're at Moorebank.
Okay.
But yeah, so she takes care of all that kind of stuff. And then I'm in charge of, I guess, the creative side of things, which is a massive role to take on yourself, especially when I'm working full time as well.
Yeah.
But I think besides that, it's been trying to gain trust in customers as well. Like, the activewear market's so saturated and you already got your Gymsharks and your Nikes, so why would I buy someone else's stuff?
Hmm.
And we're not, as I said, we're not in it to make money. We haven't made any money out of it. Everything just goes straight back into it. But to be able to fund these films that I want to do and to be able to fund, you know, the messages that we're trying to tell, we need to be able to sell the product. And as you said before, Nike's always innovating on their products and stuff like that. And we want to be able to introduce technology into our products and experiment with maybe things that people haven't done before. But in order to do that, you need the money to be able to do it. So we've got our first collection out now. I'd say...
Is there a minimum amount of a collection you feel like you need to launch an apparel brand, or can you come out with one shirt? Because you come out with 19 things and you've only been out 3 months.
So, I mean, initially when we first were going to start, it was going to be 2 hats and 2 t-shirts. Mm. And I knew nothing about female activewear, so I wasn't even going to try that yet. I was going to wait. But I think it's important to have a decent amount of stuff. But I think... Also, one thing I've learned is I think it's important to space out the launch of products. Mm. So I launched everything at once at the start. Looking back in hindsight, I would have released half of it and waited 2 months and released the other half. Because I find that you get a lot of... once you've gained trust in a customer, they're more than likely to purchase again.
Yep.
So we've got a decent amount of customers now. And I know when the next collection launches, I'd say at least 75% of them will buy again.
Yep.
Like 99% of the reviews have been, this is amazing. And then that 1% that have been like, you know, you guys could do this and that. They're not dissing our stuff, but they're giving us advice that we can put into the next collection as well, which has been really helpful.
Is that the strategy you're using? It seems like to be the startup apparel strategy, launch, downtime, launch, downtime, launch, downtime. Whereas obviously big brands, they're just, the stuff's just coming out nonstop, right?
Yeah.
Is that how you're approaching?
So right now, I mean, we've only launched the first kind of stuff.
Yeah.
In the future, we're going to be spacing out the launches. So there's been quite a bit, like 2 months of downtime before we released it. We released Scrunch Shorts about a month ago. But again, it's trying to get, starting a new business and trying to get the cash flow through to keep ordering products is where we need to get on top of. And we weren't sure how well, like, you never know how, if it's going to blow up overnight or not. So we ordered a second lot of our first collection straight away, which in hindsight, I would have ordered the next collection straight away. Right. But I mean, these are the things that you got to learn. And every mistake is just a learning point. And obviously the four of us are doing this for the first time. So
Yeah. Inventory seems like one of the hardest things to predict, because you have 19 different products, you don't know which one's going to be popular.
Exactly.
I'm sure there's like a pretty big minimum order quantity every time
you go into production. Most things are 150 per color.
Yeah.
So if I was to order gray shorts and black shorts, I'd have to get 150 of each.
Wow.
And the last thing you want is stuff that doesn't sell, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. And it's a tough game, but you're brave for getting into it.
Yeah.
Got to stay humble.
Always.
Yeah. All right. So, Nick, as we wrap up, where can people find out more about you, the brand? Where can they follow you?
So the best point to find the brand is on Instagram at this point in time, while we're working on the YouTube stuff. So you can find us on Instagram at HumbleFit.
Yeah.
That's HUMBELL
yeah.
Fit. There's a couple other Humble clothing brands out there that you might get mixed up with. And then we got their website, which is stayhumble.com.
Yeah.
And then more about me, you can follow me on Instagram as well. It's Nick Air Films, which is, I post more of the action sports stuff on there, but there's the odd Humble post on there as well.
Mm.
Cool.
And yeah, look, we're going to try on this stuff, and there's no reason we can't do an unpaid product review on the next after show. So we'll let everyone know how it goes. We'll put it to the test and take it from there. But Nick, thanks for joining us in the studio. I appreciate it.
Thanks, man.
And yeah, all the best. Course.